Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's go back to
2009
with Squidge. Let's look at the
Lions Tour
again with Squidge.
Hello and welcome to the Squidge Rugby Lions Tour Retrospective, a podcast that is somehow, for the first time, more and less relevant than it has been for the last year.
The thing is, now that we've started this new series, this brand new series of this podcast, you're going to start calling it the World Cup Retrospective.
Finally going to key into what it was called previously.
But you learned the name of the podcast about two episodes ago, and now we've changed
it. It was about the semi-finals, yeah. It took me at least the pool stages to work out what that thing was called.
Yeah.
I am Robbie or Squidge or whatever you want to call me. I am joined as ever by Mr. William Owen. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
And we are also joined by, I think, the only man in the province of Munster who wasn't called up for this 2009 tour, Mr. Tom Savage. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad. I was very close.
Yeah.
I was very close. I knew it. It was my own fault. I should have played more. I should have just focused on Hooker when they said, look, there's a spot for you there. I just wanted the ball too much. That's my problem.
What's your main position, Tom?
Flanker.
Mm. Flanker. Okay. So...
Well, these days it would be winger.
Oh,
maybe,
okay.
If I was lucky.
Okay.
You're too small to play this game now.
You narrowly missed out to somebody, let's say Jamie Heaslip, but you're doing a little bit better than him on the podcast ranks. So
yes, I have four. He only currently has one. He went back in his word.
He
overturned democracy. It's not right. That's a bad precedent.
It takes a powerful man to do that.
I lost track of the sentence I was going to say, but it's going to be vaguely Jamie Heaslip related. We can cut that. What a start.
Staying in.
Cool. Fine.
I choose what I'm cutting, not you.
Yeah, I've completely gone blank.
You gave me the power to edit this podcast, and therefore I will take out any mistakes I make and leave in any mistakes anyone else makes.
Large cats. Monster players.
Yeah, did you get the official letter from Ian McGeachan ahead of this tour saying you're in consideration?
No, I just got a kind of a letter from his solicitor telling him to stop calling him at his house. And it's just, you know, fair enough. He's sensitive. Okay. I was just trying to put my best foot forward. But it's just when you look at that, like that Lions tour, because I was looking at I went on Wikipedia like before, like around 5 or 6 minutes before doing this podcast, because I'm a professional. And I looked at the literal number of Munster players there. I had no idea it was that much. I knew it was a lot. I didn't realise it was that much.
So the squad was named right after they absolutely battered the Ospreys in that quarterfinal.
Oh,
The squad was named a couple of days later. And I think Ian McGeachan went, cool, they're good, aren't they? He fills in.
With Keith Doyle's, I watched that first game, the game, spoiler that we'll be talking about in this one. And he was just looking so young.
Yes. Yeah.
So young. Like, Keith Earls only broke through, I think, maybe the season before this year. And he had a fantastic season for Munster midfield. I kind of memory hold what happened the week after the Lions tour was named. I can't remember. There was a game that happened then, but I can't really remember what happened. But it was, Keith Earls coming in was just, he had such a breakthrough season. Everybody was thinking, like, he's coming in at outside centre. Brian O'Driscoll isn't getting any younger. This is going to be the guy who's going to come through and take it on. And when he got named as a bolter in the Lions tour, like, it wasn't a surprise to me as such, because I'd been watching him all season long. I thought, geez, he's playing really well. And especially in that Ospreys game, he was particularly good.
Yeah.
And then when it just didn't work out for him on tour at all, like, not yet. Yeah. And this game was, I think, his first appearance for the Lions, and it just didn't go well. And he kind of never really recovered.
I think that's it. I genuinely think Keith Earls has taken about 10 years to recover from this game.
Yeah.
Perception-wise, for sure, for 100%.
Oh, yeah. Not him personally, but I think his reputation took such a tanking in this being, you know, up until this point, he had two caps for Ireland, you know, both off the bench, one of which against Canada. And so he wasn't a particularly high-profile player at this point.
That's it. I didn't realise quite like yeah. what a massive shock it was. I mean, you told me about this recently, Robbie, that how what a massive bolter it was and how unexpected this was. I suppose, Tom, you're probably the most qualified person to recall this. Like, what was your reaction to seeing Keith Earls? Really?
My reaction, like, yeah, like, the thing is with Keith Earls, like, and I agree totally, like, he had the perception around him since then. It took an awful long time to recover. Same for Ronan O'Gara on this tour. But when you look at Keith Earls, like this year, like Munster were playing so well. Like, if it was the first season of the ELVs, there's a lot of concern actually as to what they would do. Because I think the Mall ended up being kind of different. You could sack it now, which made it more difficult.
Just drop the Mall from, like, there was no penalty against collapsing the Mall. So it meant everyone stopped doing it for a season. But that wasn't the case in South Africa. It wasn't the case in Super Rugby. Right. So the moment they got the test, I suppose we'll get onto this in future episodes, but South Africa were used to mauling all season. The Lions hadn't defended it. And like one of the South African tries comes off like a 30-meter maul because the Lions hadn't defended the maul for a full season.
Talking of maul, isn't it amazing that this was just pre-choke tackle? That like the amount of times the Lions would get held up and you go, oh, that's maul. That's going to be the Royal 15's put-in. And then the Royal 15 just didn't care. They didn't do the whole piling people in, deliberately holding them up and stuff. The ball, it would just kind of go to ground. They go, oh, we've got the ball. That's quite nice. Nobody actually thought, oh, yeah, that's a law. Let's make the most of that.
We should reward the guys who took that ball in. Reward the guys who stopped it once, like, defending. Like, I looked at this game, and there was a good moment, like, where there was a, I think the Lions scored a maul try at some point. And it's like the leg, like the Reg Zizes are kind of so different because like they were mauling for so long in that particular build up to that try.
Yeah.
And it was like, how is this not being called a first stop?
Yeah.
Because they were just there. They were just sitting in it. And it was a bit like the Lions were coming in and kind of redoing their work on the maul to a certain extent. And everything just looked very kind of stiff and upright and just the binds weren't great. I mean, it like they scored a try in this instance, but it was just weird seeing it all come in. But regardless, in Munster, we were very concerned about what would happen with you couldn't kick the ball directly out after passing it back into the 22. That had changed. That was going to be a big change in Munster's game. Same with the maul, because a lot of what Munster did was based on having a very strong maul. So with that being taken out of the game, to an extent, I mean, because if you could take it down anyway, there's not really much point expending too much energy in it.
Exactly.
Very concerned about how it would go. But himself and Lefemi Mathi in midfield that year, 12 and 13, were just electric. And a lot of what Munster were doing that year, we played so well. I mean, even up against the Ospreys that week, Ospreys were going very well at that time.
Yeah.
But I remember the confidence in Munster at the time was just through the roof. Mm-hmm. And blew Ospreys away that day, like with, you know, Paul Warwick dropping goals from, I think, like, just inside his own half or something. Yeah. Mad. But with Keith Earls, he was playing really, really well all season long. So I was kind of used to him being, oh yeah, well, he's Keith Earls is playing so well. Mm. Him getting named for the Lions then, along with everybody else. You'd be like, oh, okay. That kind of makes sense. There's lots of other players there. It was a shock to people outside, I'm sure. Mm. But I'd seen him playing multiple times that year and just kind of like, geez, this kid is really, really good.
How come Lefemi Mathi missed out in the end?
Because he was Tongan.
Oh, that's the one. That's the one.
Yeah, but the thing is with him, like at the time, it was like, I remember guys kind of like, can Mathi qualify for Ireland? Can Warwick qualify for Ireland?
Were really calling for Lefemi Mathi to play for Ireland?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, like people were going, like, he's been here so long. Can he do that? And same with Paul Warwick. And like, I remember people be kind of like, I remember like at the time, like friends of mine be going, can he play for Ireland? He should play for Ireland. Let me, because Mathi was, I just love Lefemi Mathi. Like, he's just like the Tongan head case, like just some of the tackles and shots he'd be putting in. Unbelievable. But yeah, like that season, Munster played really well. And I was surprised actually, because I mean, up until the Leinster game, which came up a few weeks after the Lions squad was announced, which I've tried to forget, long hours in therapy, Munster had been like, looked all like for all the world like they were going to retain the Heineken Cup that year, and they won the Magners League or whatever it was called at that point. They won that a few weeks, like a couple of weeks early in the season, and were just flying it. So when Keith Earls got selected, I was like, I can understand that.
Yeah.
But that first game against the Royal 15, it didn't go well.
I think Paul O'Connell, also the Munster captain, named as the Lions captain.
Yeah.
And there's actually, you mentioned, I'm very sorry to bring it up, that Leinster semi-final against Munster. I remember it always stuck with me. There's a moment where Stuart Barnes on the comment, at least the UK commentary, saw when O'Driscoll takes that interception pass, and you can see O'Connell's head turn and watch him, you know, as the ball goes, because the pass was going to O'Connell. You can, Stuart Barnes' commentary said, isn't this a great metaphor for what we've just seen? O'Driscoll snatching the ball out of the air like it's the captaincy from Paul O'Connell, not realizing it was the other way around.
Well.
Oh, God. Yeah, I remember, like, but with Paul O'Connell, even at the time in that game, like that Leinster game was a shock.
Yeah.
I remember, like, that game, we were, like, again, and I suppose we've learned since that too much confidence can be a bad thing. Like, that year, like, Munster beat Leinster out the gate in the RDS and in Thomond Park. Whether this is the same season or not now, I think Munster nilled Leinster in the RDS that year. And then in Thomond Park beat pretty much the same Leinster team that was named for Croke Park that year. So that game, we were just like, we've got, you know, 42,000 Lions named in the squad. We're a semi-final against Leinster like the last time, in 2006. We're going to beat them. Then we're going to go and win in the European Cup. And then a whole ton of these Lions are going to go touring as well. But then there was a period of around 3 weeks where that all went to shit. And it was just like, oh, it's fucking ruined. But like that Lions game and the build-up to it was just, for Alan Quinlan, it was a disaster.
Yeah. Well, so three of your Lions missed out on the squad before they even got there.
Yeah, and then, like, John Hayes was brought, but I think is one of the most underrated players at Munster and Ireland over the last 15, 20 years. Unbelievable player. And he was called up late, I think, to replace, was it Ewan Murray?
Ewan Murray,
Yeah, and, but yeah, look, I was at the game where Tomás O'Leary got injured. This was, I think, only a couple of days later after being named, when they got his name wrong in the announcement. Yes. Where they call him Thomas O'Leary. Tomás O'Leary, but you don't give a shit when you're named. We played the Scarlets on the Friday in Musgrave Park. And he got badly injured after, I'd say, maybe really early in the game.
Yeah,
I just remember being really early in the game. You could hear him shouting and roaring after there was a pile of bodies kind of fell down on him and broke his ankle and dislocated it something as well. Just horrific stuff. Yeah. And he was carried off. And we were just like, I remember some fella next to me kind of going, well, that's the Lions. That's him fucked anyway. Well, there's the medical assessment on the sideline. But yeah, he looked you could tell straight away he is fucked. Like, he's like, there's no Lions tour for him. And like, coming up for the game, because the Leinster game was coming up a week later as well. Mm-hmm. A lot of the Lions that were named played in that game. Like, Paul O'Connell wasn't playing, but you had David Wallace. You had Gerry Flannery was there as well. This was prior to him getting injured, which I think was actually once they got to the training camp, he got injured. But I think Alan Quinlan was there as well. And then Alan Quinlan got suspended for the action around the eyes.
That is the most Alan Quinlan thing that could have possibly happened. Getting called up for the Lions, having not played for Ireland, you know, having been left out of the team. And then gouging someone for a laugh.
And then coming in at 34 years of age, to come in, and he had such a great season. And then there was that bit at the end. And I remember Leo Cullen at the disciplinary meeting, kind of, I think he went to bat for him, I think.
Really?
Yeah, I think I remember hearing that or reading that at the time, but he got a 12-week ban.
Gouging should be legal. Game's gone soft.
and it was done, like, as in, because I remember watching that during the game on the replay, and I was just like, oh, he's in trouble there.
Yeah,
because like, I could tell what he wanted to do, which I don't think necessarily was, I'm going to pull Leo Cullen's eyes out at the stalks. I think he was just trying to just get his head up and away to pull him out of that little situation where they were in. But then went into the kind of the grip things here, which are, okay, danger here. So you end up in a situation where you're, you know, gouging him, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, that was like a real sickener at the time, because that would have been a fantastic end to his career, which didn't see as many international caps as I think he should have, but that would have been a fantastic end, but it just wasn't to be. And then Gerry Flannery, I think, what did he break his arm, or fractured his arm?
Yeah, elbow in training, he injured.
Shock. And he was playing so well.
Yeah. Tom, like, it was proper form of his career, and then he never really recovered from that. You know,
he kind of scraped the 2011 team, didn't he? But
yeah,
like his third choice.
But he never really got back to where he was immediately prior to that injury.
Yeah, it was. He kind of became. Oh, remember him, Jerry Flannery?
Yeah,
I would say at the time that Jerry at the time, like from, I'd say maybe around 2006 to 2008-09, around this injury, could make a claim to be one of the best hookers in the Northern Hemisphere, if not the best, playing in the Six Nations at the time, because he just had so much variety to his game. His line-out run was fabulous. Good scrummager. Good player on the field as well. He did it. Like, I mean, the thing is with hookers, you'll have guys sometimes who they maybe have two of those three.
Yeah.
Or one of those three if one of them is really good. But he had all of them. I think he was really, like, as in, I think he was, like, really, that year, I would have backed him to start against, like, the tests with how he'd been playing.
Oh, yeah.
But, and didn't he, and, like, I think it was in 2006, 2007, we called your man, Fat, was it, like, what's his name? The English, was he an English hooker?
Oh, Jamie George.
No. Yeah, yeah. No, no, it was the English hooker, you call him a fat fucker or something.
Yeah, yeah, Jamie, yeah, he called...
No, yeah, that was a Saracens game that happened relatively recently, where it was the Munster doctor who had said something to
Jerry. Oh, Jennifer. Okay. It was a similar lines.
Yeah, oh, stop. Yeah, I know. But like when I saw Jerry Gonsalves, I was like, well, that fucking sucks, because he's just been playing. He'd been playing so well that season. When you saw, because I went to the bother watching this game, and the Lions went really strong for that first game. Because I think when you look at these tours, they're so difficult. Everybody has a thing where, and I think this year with the Lions' name this year, like that people had this kind of thing where, well, you just pick the best players and the best players in every position. Like it's a fantasy football kind of style thing. But the cohesion and the way you have to kind of tailor guys together, and the team that finishes the tour might look nothing like what you think will start.
Yeah, there's always someone who shits the bed, isn't there? Who everyone tips to start.
There's something about the 2009 tour that won't happen again. In the it was kind of this, and maybe 2012 were the last time that was the case, that you just picked the 35-ish best players in Britain and Ireland. And I think particularly you'd never see Ian McGeachan named as coach these days, right?
Oh,
like,
no,
Ian McGeachan was named as coach for the 2009 tour because he was a nice lad and everyone liked him.
Yeah. Like, an Alliance legend of sorts.
Yeah. He had done nothing really in the coaching.
He hadn't coached for ages,
in
has
about
he?
12 years. He'd been coaching Bath, you know, he coached Bath a bit after this, but he'd been, he was sort of doing odd bits. You know, he'd coached Scotland a bit. He hadn't really.
But he's kind of got some merit.
Yeah, he got in because everyone likes him, because everyone thought he was a good lad.
And you know what? Like, not the worst choice, don't get me wrong. It could have been, so I don't know, like, maybe sure, like, you know, there's other coaches that you maybe could have picked on merit of something they've done in the past, but clearly not doing well. Like Clive Woodward or somebody, maybe? I don't know, maybe. Not that he would ever get the Lions coaching job at any point ever, but, you know, maybe
why would
like any
that. Why would anybody ever do that? Give him a Lions tour. No.
Well, they didn't. So McGeachan, when he was selected, was DOR at Wasps, but obviously he'd been DOR at Wasps for a couple of years. But Warren Gatland had been head coach. So hence why sort of, I guess he took Gatland as well, and they had a working relationship.
And
has Gatland been involved every time since?
Yes.
This tour.
So he was forwards coach for this tour, and then he's been head coach for the three since.
Yeah, like I remember looking at that, like the squad as named, and there just seemed like a lot of quality that year.
Yeah.
Like, I was quite confident about the Lions tour that season, because like, you know, typically like with the British and Irish Lions, it's like, it's kind of difficult for an Irish person sometimes, for me anyway, looking at it with the British and Irish Lions, because it always sort of, in some ways, kind of represented British Empire to me in some ways. But you kind of forget that as well, because I'm very happy for the guys who are selected. So like my one fear though would be that Ireland would have a really bad cycle of 4 years, and there'd only be one Irish guy named in the team. So if it was Tadhg Furlong. So basically, they could just rename it the British and Tadhg Furlong Lions. And it would just be just the most embarrassing thing going. Because like it just feels like sometimes that the and Irish is just kind of tagged on. Like someone said, yeah, here come the British Lions and Irish Lions. It's always that thing where everybody, a lot of the lads who were kind of talking about it, where sometimes they kind of, they feel really coached, where they're going, yeah, you know, great to be here at the British and Irish Lions, really good. it's just this great. But like seeing even this year now, but I remember that year in 2009, just feeling a lot of pride about the number of Munster players who were named. Just as a really good reflection as to where I think where they were and where Munster were in the game at that point. Like legitimately one of the best clubs in the Northern Hemisphere. We're still in that conversation now, I would suggest, but nowhere near back then where we were favourites to win the European Cup, having won it the previous year. And it was a reflection, this makes sense that there are this many Munster players there. But like overall, like I think like that just the number of quality players that were there, mixed with a couple of guys now who haven't had the same sort of long-term impact as some of the other names. Like Paul O'Connell, everybody knows Paul O'Connell now. But like you look at Ricky Flutie at the time, was he playing with Wasps?
Yeah.
Good player, very good player, I remember. But didn't really have a massive impact, that like didn't really stick in the game all that long afterwards. Because for me, when I see Lions named, it's like, geez, that guy must be good if he's in the, you know, if he's named in the Lions. And it's just like when you see him then kind of not being Lions or having that status afterwards, it's like, oh, like a bit of a letdown.
Those players like, who kind of then live off the fact they were a Lion for the rest of the time.
Yeah, there's a lot of players you kind of remember just as like, oh yeah, because he went on the 2009 Lions tour.
Yeah.
Like, and that's what you remember is good about them. Like Ross Ford, I think of as a Lion before I think of him as a Scotland player, despite the fact he got like 115 caps.
You saying Gerry Flannery as being a hot take of being possibly the starting hooker. You look at the hookers they took, right? Matthew Rees, who was one of those players that did improve over the course of the Lions tour, right? Like, but going into that tour, he wasn't perhaps a favourite amongst Welsh fans.
Yeah.
Going back, you know, he was not a good line-out thrower. Liam Mears, who now sells crisps. Ross Ford, who is Ross Ford. And Gerry Flannery, who was, as you said, like probably the best hooker in Europe at the time, especially on form and playing in two teams that both won a Grand Slam and won, you know, the European Cup a year earlier and then were favourites to kick on and do so when the squad was named. And to say, yeah, it then becomes that thing of, I mean, there's a few players like Tim Payne and so on that get called up. But that's always the case that by the end of a Lions tour, when you have Billy Twelve Trees hanging about, hopefully this year we get a similar thing like Stuart McCloskey ends up somehow on the tour.
That would be great. Or Billy Twelve Trees again.
Freddie Burns. Again. That's what I really want. Freddie Burns the Lion. That's what I want.
That would be ideal.
One guy who stuck out to me in 2009, who wasn't named in the original squad though, was Tom Croft, who ended up having a really, really good Lions tour.
Yeah.
But he was only called up after Stephen Ferris got injured.
It was after Quinlan did his eye thing.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, that's right. No, that's right. Tom Croft and I think, was it Ryan Jones?
Ryan Jones had got injured the previous day but didn't tell him until he arrived. So he then withdrew.
I mean, so to me, because I was 12 years old and didn't know what the Lions was before this tour happened. So this was sort of my introduction to the Lions. I remember we missed this game, me and Robbie and our family.
Yeah, so
we missed the team because we were in Spain at this point and we had to follow it on teletext.
Yeah, so it was back in the era before, like, social media existed, but you couldn't access it easily because there wasn't Wi-Fi everywhere you went. So I remember
2009. Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I'm old enough to remember 2009. I was in my late 20s.
I genuinely can't remember how old I was. I was probably like 46.
You'd be 46, yeah.
But I remember because we'd flown there on holiday with our parents during
back when we had two parents. Final.
I know, remember that. What a novelty. I'll never catch on. We'd flown there during the Heineken Cup final. And when they arrived, like 2 days later, I tried to use
tried to do a Geography 6
my
thing
phone,
and try and get
in yes, trying to get finals. I'd tried to use my phone, which was like, you know, like one of those flip up, like not a flip phone, like a fold up phone where you had to, it had like the nine numbers and you had to press.
Yeah, I had a Motorola at this point.
Yeah,
remember them?
I remember it had a thing where you could pay like £2 to get on a really basic version of the internet.
Oh, yeah.
And it took me about 7 minutes.
It was like all text.
Yeah, exactly. Like you couldn't load pictures, you couldn't load anything else. It would struggle with any, even text.
You could pay like £50 to load a picture, to be fair.
But I spent about 7 minutes and about £13 trying to find out who won the Heineken Cup final. So I remember I was trying like 2 days later to get onto it because I was hoping it would just be on the news or something and it just didn't come up at all by the time we'd arrived. Apparently it wasn't a big deal in Spain. So when it eventually came through, I saw it as... I saw the first article was like an article on Brian O'Driscoll, so I clicked on it and it said, after winning the European Cup with Leinster... And I went, great, I now don't have to pay £4 to read the rest of this article.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, done.
Yeah, we can move along. So yeah, we then had to watch the last Lions game on teletext whilst waiting for our flight back.
Yeah. Now,
hoping that the taxi to the airport wouldn't turn up until after we'd...
Yeah. And just refreshing, finished. Like, oh, Ogara scored. You know? And stuff like that. Like, yeah, so as I say, like, at this point, I was 12 years old, didn't know that much about rugby, let alone the Lions, and kind of assumed, well, I've heard it's a really prestigious thing. Therefore, I can remember saying to you, Robbie, when you asked, who do you think's in the Lions squad? I'd never heard of the Lions at this point.
Right.
Which Wales players do you think are in the Lions squad? And I was like, I don't know, I imagine it would just be Shane Williams, James Hook and Ryan Jones. One of them was named in the original squad, and a lot of other Welsh players were. And Martin Williams as well, actually, come to think of it.
But that was a big thing for me as well at that point. Of it was the, you know, like I remember getting the issue of Rugby World that had the profiles and all the players on them and so on. And, you know, I knew obviously the Welsh team well, but then I knew the star players for the other nations. You know, I knew.
Yeah, I knew like O'Gara.
O'Driscoll, O'Gara, O'Connell. Yeah.
And how could you forget Andy Powell?
Andy Powell.
Oh, I know. Like I didn't call Andy Powell and Keith Earls to make the tour somehow. I was banking on, like, I did have my quid on Tom Court to make the 2013 tour, but we'll get to that.
That's it. I had no idea who Tim Payne was when he got called.
No. Oh God, no.
Tim Payne, I only knew because I think he had played against Munster relatively recently. That over the last two years previously. Yeah. So I remember that guy. But like when you look at that Lions pack that they could have named. A lot of big names there. A lot of really good players.
Yeah, yeah.
Should we look at the Lions team that played this game?
Yeah.
26 minutes into this podcast. Lee Byrne, Tommy Bone, Shane Williams is the back three. Yeah. Practiced at the Ospreys.
Played together at the Ospreys.
Earls and Robertson are centres.
Lee Byrne. What a bloody player.
Yeah.
Oh, stop. I remember like at the time, didn't he go to Claremont relatively soon after this?
After the 2011 World Cup. Yeah.
What a player he was.
Mm. Yeah. And, of course, he once retweeted you, Robbie, didn't he? You once chatted shit about him on Twitter and he retweeted it. He name-searched himself and retweeted, like, Lee Byrne's having a really shit game.
At the time, I felt bad, but I was 13. What's Lee Byrne doing? Being that paranoid about a 13-year-old chatting shit about him?
Oh, God. No, I think I've been blocked by Keane Healy. I think I've said this before. But it's, poor Lee Byrne.
Yeah.
Name searching himself and then finding a young squidge and just kind of going, oh, talking shit about me? I'm going to throw you to the wolves of, you know, however many, 9 or 10,000 followers he might have or whatever.
Him and James Hook can talk about that together.
Yeah.
They can do some bonding.
At their cafe they now run together, their coffee business they now run together.
Right? Yeah.
Which is, I don't know if you followed this, Tom, but I think every single Welsh player from the last 15 years now owns a coffee business.
Yeah.
It's rugby players and coffee. It's just that somebody who...
Yeah.
Knowledge. The knowledge they have on coffee.
So many beans. You're just completely spoiled for choice if you want to head to Fat Dragon Coffee, run by Dylan Lewis. You want to
What's
head
Paul James's one?
It's his cap number. It's his Welsh cap number, which is 1026 or something.
Okay.
Richard Hibbard now runs a cafe. It's all of them. They all own cafes or coffee businesses. Yeah.
But I've been radicalized into coffee over the last 2 years.
Mm.
Radicalized. Mm. I started off on a slippery slope of I might like trying drinking coffee, so I start with the freeze dries, you know, the instant stuff.
Sure.
And I started with the fancy Lavazza stuff because I wanted to be fancy. I am a fancy guy, so I got a Lavazza, and I was just like, that's nice, and it built on and built on. And it's like, now I'm going to try French press. So I get the stuff for the French press, and that's grand, nice. But I need more, so then I go Nespresso pods. That's what I want. Next one. I kind of mix that up, though. That's kind of the next step after instant. And now I have an AeroPress, which is this thing where you're basically trying to brew close to the 9 bars of pressure, which I know you need for espresso, for coffee. And you're like, you're using air pressure and you're pumping it in. And like, how did I get here to this point where I know, and I have watched videos on extraction points for coffee and extraction points and grind sizes.
See, I hear the same thing with tea, and I now need it to the point in which I didn't have milk this morning, and I can really feel it. You know, like I can really feel the fact I haven't had tea in about 4 hours.
I base the fact that I don't have tea off what it's done to you. Like, you paved the way for me to not get addicted to tea.
It's a problem. And I worry, right. Like, I'm too afraid to ever try coffee again in case this just kicks up a gear.
Okay.
I've had two coffees today already.
Oh, wow.
And I'm only up since 11.
Okay. Well, Tom, so you like coffee. You've made that clear.
Yeah.
Do you like former Wales scrum half Richie Rees?
I might do, depending on what's coming after.
Well, I might have the perfect business for you. Maybe he might have set up a coffee business.
Oh my
Maybe
God.
Kerry Sweeney's coffee. It might be the next big thing for you.
Does he sell coffee? Because I might like to try rugby players' coffee brand coffee that they sell and then rate it.
That's a better podcast idea than this one.
Have a shot from a rugby player. So many episodes. Yeah, Scott Otten's just retired and he's already started a coffee business.
Has the Saracens guy run a coffee?
Billy Vinopola and Brad Barrett run Tiki Tonga coffee, which is the only coffee you can buy at Allianz Park.
We could also sample
need, like, free coffee pots to sell.
We could sample Lee Mears' crisps as well while we're there.
I'm trying to think, like, because I know Alan Quinlan is actually getting into these kind of mind energy drinks recently.
Oh no!
Saw him, I'm gonna try and get a case of those. I want to try them. I've got a big, like, energy drinks. I drink so much Red Bull and coffee. I've got a serious problem, guys. I've got a serious problem with the caffeine.
Have you seen what's happened to Joe Van Niekerk?
Oh, like, yes,
former Springboks and Toulon back rower.
No.
Who, since he's retired, man. He's like joined some sort of cult.
Oh, I've seen this!
Yeah, so Jungle Joe 333.
This guy?
Yeah. On Instagram, yeah. Jungle Joe 333.
Yeah. And he's like, he's basically a cult leader now. And he posts photos of himself with his top off, walking around like these inspirational quotes saying things like, the body is the truest vessel.
Like, we can say whatever we want space, about. Say what you want. Body. You know, Richard Hibbard has gone, he's retiring from rugby soon and he's going to this coffee business or whatever. You know, Lee Mears is retired and he's now making crisps. Joe Van Niekerk retired to become Tarzan.
Yes.
I've seen this guy and I remember, like, thinking, geez, he looks so much different from his rugby playing days. Not just from now, he's like, you know, a cult leader and who knows, like, as in, he looks like the type of guy who might have ate somebody recently and has that thing where I have tasted human flesh. And I like this.
His most recent post is, your smile is so infectious. Is that he caught a disease off eating your smile?
You didn't properly cook your smile. That's the problem. You've got to get this to 100 degrees for 10 minutes.
You need to preheat it in advance. You need, don't skimp on it. It's not worth doing.
I'm hoping that once I eventually retire from TRK, I'm going to get into a coffee business.
Mm.
And just, you know. Tira King's coffee. I'm no good at names, so I'll just go with the one that's worked so far and just use that for everything.
The K in TRK stands for coffee.
Yes. And the R is for really good.
Do you want to hear a poem by Joe Van Niekerk?
Yes.
Yes, of course I do.
Willing to experience aloneness, I discover connection everywhere. Turning to face my fear, I meet the warrior who lives within. Opening to my loss, I gain the embrace of the universe. Surrendering into emptiness, I find fulfillment without end.
See, that to me is just saying, like, he's got nobody around him because he's eaten everybody who came to his church. That's okay, the entire scheme.
I've just checked. Skulk Burger follows him on Instagram. I wonder what he thought of that.
Wait, no, he's. I reckon that's where it started. He heard Skulk Burger for tasty and tried to eat it.
It's like, no, it's undercooked, Joe. We've gone over this.
He's like, no, I just need to put two slices of bread on either side. And we've got
a little bit of happiness in the middle.
Your smile and your hair are so infectious. Right, no, the Lions 15. We were doing the Lions 15.
We've not come near the game
the
yet.
The halfbacks. Ronan O'Gara and Mike Blair as halfbacks. Mike Blair obviously called out for Thomas O'Leary. I wonder if they'd written this team out in advance and they're going to go with established combinations such as the Ospreys back three and O'Gara and O'Leary as halfbacks.
Yes, yeah.
Then Andrew Sheridan, Matthew Rees and Adam Jones as the front row. And I don't know if you noticed this, but watching it on YouTube with the South African commentary, they seem to be in like a Jungle Joe style cult of Andrew Sheridan. Like they
really like him, and Shane Williams as well. They're really
with that. Shane Williams was reigning World Player of the Year and so on. Blah, blah, blah.
But if you're a South African guy, what is not to like about Andrew Sheridan?
That's the fact he's English.
6'4", 6'5", loose head prop, absolute monster.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah. But
like, yes, make him president.
There were a few. Can you imagine Razzie's heart eyes when he saw him for the first time?
That's a big guy.
Yeah. It's a big guy. Now I've got a big erection. So no, there's a couple of points where other players do things and they just attribute them to Andrew Sheridan. Like the first scrum, Andrew Sheridan gets penalised. The second scrum, Adam Jones very clearly like pins his man in, and like you can see there's no movement on one, but like it, if it's obvious to me,
go on, tell us
what's
about
going on in the scrum. If it's obvious to me what's going on in the scrum, clearly, you know.
But tell this just, hard Irish flanker who's currently staring you down how to do scrums.
They give all the credit to Andrew Sheridan repeatedly for anything Adam Jones does. And there's like enormous Andrew Sheridan circle jerk that like if Adam Jones literally like picked up his opposite number and put him in his pocket, then and like obviously also
because Andrew Sheridan told him to do it.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be like if Adam Jones paid off his mortgage, it'll be well Andrew Sheridan got a low rate of interest, you know. It's like literally anything he did, like Adam Jones could be elected prime minister and it'd be what a phenomenal effort by Andrew Sheridan showing democracy to come out and vote.
I'm going to pause you there for a second, Robbie, because we are 36 minutes into this podcast now and we've finally said something about the game, right?
Yes.
36 minutes in, we've said our first thing about the game. 36 minutes is also the same amount of time it took Keith Hills to catch the ball in the game.
Oh,
did you also make a note of this?
Yes, I did.
Look, I remember because I was watching the early going of the game and I remember there was a bit at the start, because the reason why I was thinking of Andy Powell was the guy who's commentating on the game on the South African coverage is doing a bit of chat as the team sheets are on the screen as it's coming along, and they start panning to different people in the crowd. And there was a couple of people there, he goes, and he mentioned, there's no Andrew Powell is playing today. Jamie Heaslip is in. And look, there's this. And there's a person comes up on the camera and they've got a wig on and a big flag. And for a second, the commentator can't tell if it's a man or a woman. And you can hear the wheels turning in his head as he's going, and that lady looks a bit like Andy Powell. As like, oh God, dude, you're just like one of those things where, well, I've started talking, so I'm just gonna finish.
can you imagine, right, tuning in to watch your daughter who you know is at the rugby and you think might see on TV in the crowd?
Like it was an older lady, I think. It was an older lady, and it was okay. And you could see the wheels in his head was just going.
All the same, if you're hearing that your mum looks like Andy Powell. Yeah.
Also, what that means is he was trying to figure out whether it was Andy Powell or a mum.
Yeah.
For that thought to come into his head.
How sober do they look? That's the only way to tell.
Are they on a golf cart? Are we looking at them on the motorway? But when you look at and like, but the early going of the game, because I remember I was watching it and I was like, I was looking because I knew in this game that Keith Earls doesn't catch the ball for a long fucking time. He had two opportunities to do so and didn't. But as I was watching it, they cut down to a guy on pitch side, right? Who I think is their Lions representative.
Yeah.
He sounds like he is, but it's the most typical guy at a game shit stuff. Yeah. Where he's kind of making a kind of a psychological read of what's happening out in the field. And they're just like, the Lions fellas, they look rattled. They look spooked. And at the time, it was only 0-0. And I didn't notice anything being massively out of the ordinary. And it's like, the Lions are looking worried. When the other Lions players who were here, they showed up early and they're looking confident. They don't look so confident now. They look a bit rattled.
That was 4 seconds into the game.
Yeah, it's literally about 3 minutes into the game. Like, Keith Hills knocks the ball on once, and that's all that's happened.
And it's like,
Keith Hills has knocked the ball on once.
The lads are rattled. They've never seen that before.
That's none of them have been to training.
So Keith Earls has his first four touches of the ball, he knocks it on.
Yeah.
And it's his fifth touch of the ball where he finally catches it.
Was it four or was it two? Because he had one really good one.
Oh, yeah.
Where the ball came to him and he caught it one-handed. And I remember thinking at the time, hey, Nice. Look, because I'm looking for my guys to do well first, which I think everybody does in the Lions. How are my guys doing? Are the guys I've put a large hype train behind, are they doing well so I don't look stupid? So, yes. So when he did that, I was just like, yes. Yes, Ramsey, yes.
Well, I'm actually quite relieved that George Ford isn't going on the tour, because I would have been, I've spent so long hyping him up.
Yeah.
I like, if he had a bad Lions tour, I never could have lived it down. Mm. Not that he would, because he's the best 10. But
yeah. It's a bit like if Gavin Coombs had ended up as a ball player this year. I'm just like, please just score a try. Just do something. Make it look like I know what I'm talking about, please.
But what I enjoyed is that every single time Keith Hills gets the ball for the rest of the game, the commentators were really patronising and congratulated him on catching the ball every single time.
Yeah, it was grim, a terrible start. And I think he's even said this himself in the intervening years, that it was probably too soon for him to be going on the tour. But because I remember it was Paul O'Connell walked out first with the Lion. I thought it was Dobbs, the youngest player, who did that. But maybe not. Maybe
the captain carries it out for the games, but the youngest player looks after it in between.
Oh, okay. Because you could see Earl's coming up behind him, and he just looks nervous. And then the Royal 15 come out with the worst fucking kits I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, they look like 13-15 kits.
Yeah,
they're so like baggy, and you know, like they're the sort of thing I played in under 16s.
Yeah, like, they look when the first team's borrowing the better kit.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't even think the Lions didn't even start that poorly that game. I remember that, like, you could see they were obviously trying to work, put things together and stuff like that, but they look pretty good. Like, as in, it's always difficult in the first game because you've been doing stuff in training, trying to build up certain bits and how you're going to play and stuff like that. Mm. But like, one thing I remember, like, is in that, like, you'd see it much more now, but like, forwards just not passing the ball at all.
Yeah.
If that ball goes to the forwards, that is being fucking hit up the line, and that's it.
Like, three or four spaces away from the contact, there's always a massive gap, and just like one simple tip online would mean try. And it's mad how easy it would be to win this game with any modern attacking structure.
I realised that the moment Martin Williams touched the ball, because that was, and you realize that was his whole USP as a player.
He was
a forward who could pass.
Yeah,
at that,
and this was being seen as like, what is this unicorn of a player who can do this? He's what? What's he doing all week?
Because Martin Williams wouldn't happen nowadays because he is too small. But he was a player that got by purely on thinking about things instead of actually being physical. And I always enjoyed that guy could get on the Lions.
He was technically very good, wasn't
he? Yeah.
And I think he did play very well in this game, actually.
But it's like my favourite Martin Williams moment was him deliberately taking out the TMO so they couldn't show a try. Mm. Conrad Smith has scored.
I'm personally here for him tripping over Rob Carney on a try-scoring opportunity and getting the yellow card tactically. And so, yeah, that's brilliant. That's what an open-side flanker should do.
The thing is with Marion Williams, you always knew he was just an incredibly good player. Because there's guys who are good players, you might not say are the most necessarily skilled players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, Martin Williams is always just a very well-rounded player. Like, Scott Quinnell, I always was a fabulous Welsh player, but wasn't as skilled as Williams would have been. Not the same sort of skill set. I think Richard Hill is a guy who's got a similar kind of way about him as well. So it's just, there's guys outside my window who are two Chinese guys walking past with brochures. And they look to be a church of some kind. What the hell?
Jungle Joe! He's recruiting you.
And I was like, what are they doing? Oh, the boys are coming in. Oh, this is great. It's like a cult of after showing up.
They're in your room now.
It's like with the Van Eerkirk guys. It's like, lads, I was just joking about the eating stuff, but if you're serious, don't do it, please. I have too much to live for this year. But yeah, I know you look at guys like that, just hugely skilled players and being guys who are, you know, like easy selection for the Lions and kind of built and kind of stitched together that back five, I think. He was kind of one of those very, like, kind of typical kind of glue players at the time. But like, I think for the Lions coming into this one, when you look at the rest of the pack that were there, the amount of guys who looked well, way too old before their time. Because Andrew Powell, Jamie Heaslip replaced him. But like, you look at Simon Shaw, who I'm not sure how old he was at the time, but he looks like he's in his 40s. Joe Worsley in the same way. And then Alwyn Jones on the bench.
Yeah.
Who looked like a guy who was you know, making his debut age 38 years of age.
So he kept the scrum cap on at that age to hide his hairline until eventually it was a respectable thing. Yeah,
the age and hairline gap met eventually when he was about 31.
Simon Shaw was 35 and he was the only player who'd been on the previous tour of South Africa in 97. And boy, did he look it.
And I think he passed that baton on to Alan Wynn.
Yeah.
He's a huge guy. I mean, like, because Alan Wynn Jones in this game, this was his first Lions tour, Alan Wynn Jones.
Yeah.
I found it cool that he scored a try in this game.
Mm.
And then now he's on his, like, fourth tour.
Yeah.
And like it's however many years later, like Alan Wynn Jones is just an amazing player.
Yeah,
like amazing for him to be as complete a player in almost every aspect of it. And he's rocking around 120 kg now at 34, 35 years of age.
Yeah,
like just to be such a well balanced player, like is in a guy. Like I remember thinking at the time when I first saw him, good player, obviously, but I never had an idea that he would be as iconic a guy as what he's ended up being on this tour. But yeah, like on that selection, like that's a pretty, like there's quite a lot of guys there who are fairly legendary players in their own right.
And the thing about Alan Wynn Jones is he's adapted to whatever the modern lot was at that time. Like he's become the image of that and he's updated and changed his game completely.
Yeah.
And I think people just think of him as being this player with his aura and his work rate. But he's become whatever he's had to become.
He can offload and pass and do the whole lot of it. He's such a, and he's a great organizer as well. That, you know, he understands sort of modern, well, obviously he understands modern structures. He's a captain of an international team in 2021. But, you know, he's very sort of adaptable in that sense. And going from the way Gatland played to the way Pivac's played, and he's just done it on the fly. He's not had any sort of worry about that.
Should we very quickly look at the Royal 15 team?
Yes, so I don't know a lot of these players.
It's a real list that, like, there are a handful of players like, oh, remember him? A handful of players, he was playing Olivier. Nas Olivier, Nas Olivier. He was a...
Sorrow Pretorius.
Yeah, Sorrow Pretorius, who was great.
And went to the Dragons later.
Great career at the Dragons and at the Cheetahs. After that,
Bjorn Basson, who now plays for the San Diego Legion, my favorite MLR team, which shows how far he's come. Played for the Springboks a year after this.
Again, Dragons legend Reiner Landman was on the bench.
Yes. What I love about this, so at one point, Hugh Bladen, the commentator, mentions that one of the second rows, Lombard, has the nickname Lee Toring, which means lighthouse in Afrikaans, which means 2 out of 3 second rows in that Royal 15 squad had the nickname Lee Toring, meaning lighthouse in Afrikaans.
I remember the dude, wasn't that guy? He said, the lighthouse has scored the first, and now the ox has scored the second. When a tight head just kind of just flopped over the line for one of their tries. They're like, but a lot of those guys, I think Mac Oena is a guy who I remember hearing a lot about at the time because the name sticks out to me. But
I don't remember him, but he was really good. I
mean, if we're talking people that stand out, the names that stand out, the loose head was called Albertus Buckle.
That's a great name. And he called him Bertie Buckle on the commentary.
Bertie Buckle. I love that commentator's voice. He's still doing stuff for Supersport.
It's so monotone.
That guy is like iconic with South African rugby for me with the way he calls these games. But you know what I saw? Like with one of the assistant referees in this game is Jack O'Paper.
Yes, who looks like young and hot. Young hot Jaco Piper action.
And I'm just thinking like that. I remember when he was like, you see him reffing in the I think it was in the Pro 14 at the time, back when the Cheetahs and the Kings, we were able to travel up and down.
Yeah.
Like, and with Jacko, like, you always know you're going to get, like, there's going to be a high shot missed in one of those games where Jacko's refereeing, because it just happens every time. And then just seeing him there, like, you know, being the assistant referee for the Royal 15, he's just like with his hair looking good and looking. He's just thinking about the high shots that are now totally legal and acceptable. It's just like, this is the game as it's meant to be, lads. None of this stuff now with all these rules, high shots. No.
With you talking about Hugh Bladen's commentary there, I've pulled up, Robbie, you're going to know what I'm referring to.
Yes.
But my favourite moment of his commentary is him attempting to pronounce Julia Polo-Lunganga, the Samoan international's name.
Side, Polo is up there. And it's Junior Polo-Lunganga.
We've all been there.
Oh, I'm there at the moment with the Cell Sea Sharks, which I really struggle with. I am just like, I've tripped over myself so many times recording a podcast yesterday. Stop, pause, and eventually just like, I'm just going to use this take. I'm sick of it.
How many times did you say sail sharks?
It's, for me, it was Saoirse Ronan.
Yeah. There was one video. Where, you remember back a couple of years ago when there was all those clips of England training with pool. I can't do it. Pool noodles.
Yeah.
The high ball stuff. And I tried to make a joke about that in a video. And I genuinely spent about half an hour trying to say the words pool noodles in a sentence. And there is still, like, that's the only time I saved the raw file because it was so long that I didn't. I've got a version where I just kept me trying to say pool noodles it was genuinely like 6 or 7 minutes. I was trying to say it, getting increasingly annoyed with myself and stopping from like pouring a glass of water to try and get it right.
You could probably say pool noodles a few thousand times there. I've just said it what first try. I'm so sorry.
No, I'm okay with pool noodles. I can say that pretty easy.
Yeah.
But for some reason, the other one just messes me up. Same with wasps, but they're pronounced all wrong as well. Apparently, it's wasps.
Yeah, it's but whatever you want to
call it. Just doesn't
spell it with an O if it's wasps.
It just doesn't suit my accent.
It's them. That's what I call them. I call them all Alberta Buckle. Can I also mention, right, I really like the... The fullback for the Royal 15, Russell's Jaycox, which A is a superb name again. But like, right, if I were Gloucester Rugby Club, heart eyes would have shot out the moment I saw this guy.
Yeah.
Because he is thrilling. He can do it all, really, but he's also a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah.
And that guy is Gloucester all over. I've never seen a more Gloucester player than this guy.
He was great. Like, sometimes he'd come up with like some really fun counterattacks, some great kicks. And then there's that point near the end where he'd go like, oh, I'm going to go for a speculative kick. This is going to bounce to the corner and win the game. And it should go straight to like one of the best attacking wingers in the world, Tommy Bowe's throat.
And there's a few,
what the hell is he thinking?
At one point, he tries a little like dink over the top, and he just absolutely skies it.
He's the one. He does this little chip over the top that goes perfectly sideways and perfectly into Bjorn Basson's hands.
But he's so entertaining to watch. I really enjoyed watching.
I loved him. Yeah, he was great. I've never heard of him, but
no, me neither. But if I were Gloucester, I would have signed that contract there and then.
For sure, for sure. Because the only other player that we've not mentioned that I've heard of from the Royal 15 is Rian Viljoen, who comes off the bench in the fly half. Sunwolves legend, Rian Viljoen.
And he was playing up until relatively recently, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Is he still playing?
I think he might be. I think he's still playing in Japan.
I think he is, yeah.
Or maybe MLR.
Because like, I remember at the time thinking, because I did a series last year during the lockdown about like, looking back at games from that period, from 2009, the Leinster versus Munster game. And I was surprised at how old, relatively speaking, a lot of the Munster guys were at that point. Donnacho Callaghan was like 30, 31. And he was still playing up until two and a bit years ago.
Yeah.
And it's like, same with Simon Shaw. Like, so many of this pack, you would expect, like, even just from the guys who were selected here, you would expect would be kind of gone out of the game at this point. But there's still so many of them are actually active, like, you know, Alan Wynne-Jones and like Donnacho Callaghan up until relatively recently, like Jamie Heaslip probably would have been as well had he not got that that back injury.
Yeah,
it is crazy, like with the game getting more physical and with this tour kind of being, I think, a kind of a harbinger really of the game becoming way more physical, because I think this tour was the one where people kind of going, I've never seen games as physical as this.
Yeah.
To see guys still involved, up until like Earlsey's still playing, and like Jamie Roberts playing up until recently as well.
He's still playing.
Sam Roberts, O'Connell going until like 2015, and like Alan Wynne-Jones as well, like still being a huge player, like as in. It's amazing to see it, with the game being as physical as it is, because that was one thing that stuck out to me watching this. It's just like, there's lots of these guys who are still playing up until relatively recently.
Yeah.
I mean, we're looking at, I think it's six of the squad are still playing today, which is a really high number for 12 years on.
It stops me feeling old as well, this being my first Lions tour. Yes. Like, a load of the players I sort of clung on to when I first loved rugby are still going, like Jamie Roberts and Alan Wynne-Jones. Like, there'll be a point where all of these players have retired, and then I will feel old.
Yeah, and that's not a million miles away. But as I say, Alan Wynne's got at least 22 more Lions tours in him. So
yeah.
You see, like, Trevor Brennan's young fella captaining France under 20. It's just like, good God.
That's it. It's the moment I remember Stephen Jones's son being born, and he was born, I think, on the same, he shares a birthday with Barry John. He was born in the same hospital as Phil Bennett. And like the bookies' odds on him playing 10 for Wales were insane the day he was born. Yeah, the moment that happens, I'm going to feel so old.
Yeah.
Because I remember reading that article the day of it.
Keeping tabs on how Carter Williams, Shane's son, is doing on Instagram. Because he'll post videos of him scoring. Oh, man. And just thinking, oh, the pressure on that lad.
Can I show one more thing from the build-up to this game?
Yeah.
Bladen says of the, as a rule 15 coming out, and I have no idea what this refers to, he says they will be introduced to the king. And then there's a pause of like 2 seconds. And he says, we've just been told that they're not going to be introduced to the king. And I have no idea
who is this?
What the king is. But we find out that there's 15 of invitational players are not going to meet Elvis or whoever else they've got out to be the king.
Oh, so maybe like King Arthur was the guy who was meant to be on the bench who Jamie Heaslip filled in for.
I went to rewind this and watch it again in case they gave some context of who the king might be, and they don't. There's no reference. I've got no idea who the king is.
Oh my God. And like when the, but like what I was saying earlier, when the game actually started,
I got
the impression that the commentary team were kind of hyping up how well the Royal 15 were doing initially. Because like I said, it seemed initially that the Lions had most of the ball and they made a few mistakes. Keith Earls made a few mistakes. And they're like, but other than that, I thought that the Lions actually looked fairly coherent. They were running the ball pretty well. I mean, you could see kind of, you know, some of their transition structures look quite good at times as well. When the Royal 15 did kick to them, very, very dangerous back three, like really, really talented, like talented group there. But I was blown away at how good Jamie Roberts was on the ball. On the crash ball in this game.
Going forward.
Like you forget sometimes just what a physical specimen he was. I mean, and still is, but like at that time, like as in he was one of the biggest, most physical midfielders going. It was a hugely important part of this tour. And
you forget how fast he was as well. He had that like real acceleration.
And he had a good offload on him as well.
Yeah.
But I think and a head like an Easter Island statue, like just his jawline, unbelievable.
I think it was an Easter Island statue, actually. I think he just ripped it out of the ground and stuck it on like a big enough, the only body big enough to carry it. No, but
that should have worked. That midfield should have worked.
Yeah, yeah.
Jimmy Roberts, Keith Earls playing off any disruption that you get from Roberts, and with O'Gara, who like I will go to my grave saying Ronan O'Gara was underrated as much as much accolades as he got. And as much, I think, because, look, any time that I've posted about Ronan O'Gara over the last number of years, there's always some English dude ends up in my mentions kind of going, ah, but what about the Springbok Tour 2009? And it's just, it ends up, like a bit like you were saying, Keith Earls, like it did harm his perception as being a player. Because I when I was just looking there a second ago, looking about the Royal 15 2009, just did a quick Google of it there. And one of the videos that shows up under the second suggested one is Keith Earls' nightmare for the Lions versus...
Yes!
That's
Ruddy Data.
That'll be Ruddy
genuinely,
Data.
At halftime in this game, I decided to search Keith Earls' Royal 15 just to see if Ruddy Data would upload a video. And he has.
Of course he did.
He only went and did it.
But that was like, I have that written in my notes. This is Ruddy Data's wet dream.
Wow.
Like, this is his favourite thing in the world, is watching someone have this bad a game on a
and
big occasion.
Keith Earls making mistakes was a bit of a meme for a while, wasn't it? It was kind of a trick to point that out.
Do you know what? I heard some people on Reddit were into that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that ended up on my timeline every now and then. And I was just like, what? What is this?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, but the thing is with Keith Earls, you can just see in this game, like, where if the first ball he gets, he hangs on to. I think that he probably has a way better game here.
Yeah, and it just seems like Brian O'Driscoll.
He is already better than Brian O'Driscoll.
Apologies.
We agreed this before when I signed the contract coming in.
Did Brian O'Driscoll ever come off the bench against Canada? I don't think he did.
He didn't. He was too much of a coward to come off the bench against Canada. But yeah, look, with Earls, look, I think that because he would have been nervous coming out onto this game anyway, right? The first touch he gets, spills it, it gets into your head then. And it seemed that he starts like that the next one had a lot of cognitive pressure on. I've got to get this.
Yeah.
And then he didn't. And it started to build from there, and it becomes very hard to build in then. If you're
dropping
be,
easier balls as well.
Yeah, and like it,
just a nightmare.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Even when he's catching I've been the there. Ball at the end of the half, he... Oh, no, yeah, I think we all have.
We've all been there. Yeah. Those games where you feel like you can't catch anything.
Yeah. Like, towards the end of the half, he tries to force an offload as well. Yeah. And it, you know, throws it straight at the floor.
On transition, wasn't it? Shane Williams had a good break, and it was just like... Any moment that he could get to kickstart himself, it just never happened.
Wasn't his day, was it? Bless him.
No, and he never recovered on the tour. It was just like that kind of shaped how the rest of the tour was going to be, where he was just like, you're not going to be anywhere near the test now, unfortunately. But I think he said it himself that he said like that he was just wasn't ready for that.
Yeah,
to go from a young fella from Moyross in Limerick to go, for, you know, to be a main player for Munster and then onto the Lions the same year.
Yeah, it's a big jump. Like,
it is a huge jump, But like, I think since then he's proved he's a better player than those mistakes would suggest, obviously. But the perception can be a long time in turning.
For sure.
Like a lot of guys thought that O'Gara was like a bit of a flaky guy who would lose, lost the run of himself because of the, that second test. Yeah, it is weird how the Lions sometimes can shape your perception for years. And have your how you're rated as a player, even though it might just be one game. Even
should we talk about the first Royal 15 try? Given we're an hour in
now, no, it's a really nice try. Really, it is.
And they built it to 22 for a long time. Yeah. Nas Olafir does this really nice pass out the back to the captain Cock, who runs a nice short line and grounds the ball really well. It's a really, really good finish. And the secondary commentator describes what Olafir, his little out-the-back pass, describes it as Olafir does a little backflip.
I remember looking at that try again, and it was just like fairly simple, but a product of just good territory that they had.
Yeah.
And then just simple skills. Like, I think, was there like a forward pass? A forward pass the ball here? Was it a forward pass?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, there's a space.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
The guy runs straight through the gap and like finishes well, to be fair.
Analysis is so easy on 12-year-old rugby matches, isn't it?
It's just like, hey, why don't you pass the ball? It's like, whoa, I'm a forward. What are you talking about? Hey, what the hell is wrong with this guy?
Why don't I what?
But like, during that game, like, you could see when forwards got the ball, 99% of the time, it was, you're going to hit that ball up now. And it was just that was the game. And I remember looking, I was looking back at the Heineken Cup final or semi-final from 2009, it was very much the same, that once that possession came from the ruck here, that it was like, well, you're either hitting a forward for a carry or you're giving it to the 10 to go wider. And it was very much based on that was the structure, that there was two options.
Yeah, and it's amazing how quickly it just became the norm. Somewhere around sort of, I think between sort of 2014 and 16, you start to see more and more forwards were able to pass, until it became the point that every second row, every basically at least 14 players on your field need to be able to throw like 30 meter accurate miss passes nowadays. Yeah. Otherwise, you're not making it at the high enough standard.
The structures.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're looking at the player. They were kind of rudimentary around this point, where there was guys who would carry tighter, and then there might be guys who might be in the wider channels. But there wasn't the sort of the kind of the approximate forward shapes that we see today, you know, like with your 3-2-2s or 2-4-2, whatever. That wasn't necessarily the case back then, where there seemed to be more of a kind of a relative position, where you were either a guy who was off nine or further out, rather than hitting into a specific slot, so to speak. So, like, with today, like, you might see guys who their positioning sometimes is independent of where they may expect to get a pass on first or second base from the 10 or any other creative player. But in this game, you could see that it had advanced quite a bit from the mid-2000s. Because I remember watching the Lions tour in 2005 relatively recently, and it was just seems like it's way longer ago than what it actually was.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, the game's moved on so far in the last 10 years, never mind. You know, as I say, sort of from
even
this last
talk, 5 years.
It's notable from the same 2015 to now.
Yeah.
The changes you're seeing, both in terms of skill set and, you say, structure and just ability to spread and
just the way the game's coached generally.
It's,
is...
like, there's more and more changes you're noticing since 2019. You know, like I'm already, there's already tries I'm seeing, I'm going, oh, that would or wouldn't have been scored 2 years.
Yeah, that's it. That's there was something I watched back from the 2019 World Cup for like something I was writing and realizing, oh, that would have been scored nowadays just because of a structure, which is now a thing that wasn't back then.
Yeah.
Which is wild to think we're only, you know, less than 2 years on.
And do you think that the influence of Japan?
Oh, yeah.
Like that their influence on the game actually well exceeds their achievements as such. Like they're really, they didn't win big trophies. You know, they won some good games.
They won a lot of friends. That's the most important thing.
The friends they made along the way that they lifted above their heads. The friends they made. But like the influence that their style, and I suppose that like Jimmy Joseph, like that his influence on the style has had a massive effect on the game.
Yeah.
And I think Eddie Jones from before, from 2015, that impact, because you've probably seen that thing floating around of Eddie Jones, like the Japanese playbook from the time. The way that he had Japan playing has been hugely influential in the way that different elements of the game are played all over the world. And I think that in 2015 and 2019, they had a large impact on how teams think, well, maybe we can kind of play a little bit closer to what they're playing.
There's a lot of this in the video I'm working on at the minute, and, you know, how the Lions might play of...
God, like, Tom, why are you spoiling it for him?
But like 4.5 of the top 8 teams in the world now play the same structure Japan were in the World Cup. You know, like it's
Yeah, 1-3-2-2 shape. Yeah, it's hugely influential, and it's like you can see it, especially in that in this series in 2009. Yeah. Just how the game has just in complexity, just incrementally has just built, and in a way, this series in 2009 I think was a bridging point between the old rugby and the way rugby has become, and I think that that has helped, like, has kind of shaped sometimes people kind of their complaints about the game. That they have lost the game that it was because of the complexity that has come in since.
Yeah.
And like you said, even since 2019, it's gotten more complex.
Oh, there's no sidesteps anymore. It's like, no, do you not enjoy like forwards throwing brilliant miss passes out the back and players standing a bit deeper and having a bit more time on the ball to actually do something interesting? Like, do you not enjoy that because you're not seeing somebody do something, some weird sidestep that doesn't fucking work?
I think so much of this, though, comes down to the fact that the majority of rugby coverage doesn't try and explain this at all.
For sure.
But the fact that people who watch the Premiership or the Pro 14 or the URC, as it is now, every week, don't know what a 1-3-1
We were saying this, Robbie, weren't we? Having a chat.
Like, that's a failure of responsibility on behalf of, you know, like, people
absolutely
watching.
Absolutely. Like, we were having a chat the other day where we were saying, like, every time we turn on the television for a rugby match and there's somebody who retired more than 7 or 8 years ago on there, we kind of roll our eyes because it's just like, we're all going to talk about the game that you retired from and talk about pride and passion and pods and the fact that you should stop kicking. And it's just like, shut up, man.
We need the forwards working around the corner.
Yeah, exactly. That's
which
not
someone
a thing
genuinely
anymore.
Said quite recently on TV.
Yeah, like they've not even grasped playing out the back, let alone 1-3-3-1 structures.
Who was
or
it?
Whatever other structure that may go from that.
The week before the Lions squad was named, and George Wood had a brilliant game for Leicester against Ulster, and one of the pundits said, "Well, he's really good because he plays really flat to the line."
It was Austin Healey, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it's like that's not a thing anymore. Oh, that hasn't been a thing for the better part of 10 years
I hate that. And the thing is, even if that was a thing anymore, George Ford doesn't fucking do that. He plays extremely deep.
His game is based on the depth that he takes because he doesn't want to be a guy who plays flat in the green line because he'd get murdered if he does this.
Genuinely, he used to do that when he was, 21, 22, when he was playing for Bath, and that was how he originally got into the England team because he played flat to the gain line and he brought his forwards onto the ball because that was a thing back then. Whereas it's not now, and so he's gone, okay, that's not a thing anymore. Why don't I not do that?
It ties back to the same thing as Keith Earls, right? People get tied into one perception of a player or of you know, rugby in general almost. The people get an idea in their head and it lodges in there rather than thinking, oh, actually, players get better, the game changes, elements of the game change, and it's not always bad when that does happen, right? Like, people find it far easier to go, oh, so-and-so's gone off the boil, you know, Johnny Sexton's gone off the boil and is now a worse player than he was 10 years ago. People don't like to go, oh, so-and-so is a far better player than they were 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Because there was a moment in this game, and I think it was a Paul O'Connell carry, very late in the game, actually, a really good carry of the ball. Those kind of moments I think, are what people look at for. Because one of the things that I hate about modern punditry and commentary in the game is, oh, they're playing very direct.
Yes.
With direct being, they're successfully carrying the ball repeatedly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And like, well, of course that is being direct and successful because you're advancing up the field in the easiest way possible.
Yeah. But, it's not notable, is it?
Yeah, like the game has advanced, though, in that the guys now who are making the tackles are bigger, stronger, fitter than what they were even 10 years ago.
Mm.
So it is not easy to do that. Yeah, like where I don't think you physically can play as direct as what people want to do. But then you get kind of accused of shoving the ball across the field. And it's like, there's no way to win.
I said this to you, Will, the other day, but if Stuart McCloskey played in the 80s, he'd be an all-time great.
Yeah. Yep.
Right, like he would be one of the best players we've ever seen.
He's big and he can pass and kick.
What? And he's got a top knot. the holy triumvirate.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's like, but I said this on my own podcast the other day about Ty Byrne.
Yeah,
like, Byrne, 6'6", a guy, 114, 115 kg, can play 4, 6, whatever role you want to give to him. Forget about numbers in the back for a minute. Like, that type of player back in 2009 just didn't exist. Who has Ty Byrne's skill set? A guy like a poacher who's 6'6"? Like a guy with his passing, his offloading, his ability to carry, his lineup work
both sides of the ball?
He can kick. It's great. And like his ability to sidestep.
He's handsome.
You know, good-looking guy. Tall.
Yeah. His sister's a model.
A lovely Instagram presence as well. Not overbearing. Really nice stuff. Like, like that type of player didn't exist back then. Yeah. Like, just, and it's crazy. And like that type of player now is kind of like that player, you know, a lot of clubs and provinces, they're all looking for a guy who can do that.
Yeah, he's kind of the benchmark in a way.
Yeah, and like this is a guy who was like delivering pizzas, you know, to his fellow Leinster players in 2014, 2015. It's amazing. And like for him to be on the Lions tour now, like it just kind of shows how the game has evolved and where like only through looking at the game more scientifically now, Can you see the value of a guy like a Ty Byrne, who, if you're using him to be a battering ram off nine most of the time, that's probably not a best use of his skill set. But if you're a guy who's a second row in 2009, that's what you're expected to do.
Yeah.
Chuck the ball. And if you're not chucking the ball, what are you doing?
And there's something as well in the fact that someone like Ty Byrne is viewed as a very, very good second row rather than the second coming, in the way like someone like Jonah Lomu was when he combined several attributes.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I think that's a big mark of just how far it's come and how high the skill level is nowadays and how much higher than it has ever been before.
The way to sum this up, rugby, it's different.
It just is.
Just so many values.
Players on opposite teams having a drink after the game. You don't see that in any other setting ever.
You know, I think all the time about when Stuart Hogg and Finn Russell had that beer together.
Oh, wow.
Actually, really... don't talk too much about that. I'm going to start choking up.
Yeah, that's it. it's a bit much. It just really said to me that rugby, it's different. It's just different.
It's magical. Different. Magical. I feel like doing kind of a fist emoji. I'm doing it into the camera now, bang. And then it's like, bang. Don't see this in any other game. And then two beers emoji.
Yeah. The Exeter having beers and babies on the pitch. Just rugby's different. Rugby's different. They love the bones of each other and of conspiracy theories, apparently. Should we from the game itself, right? At one point, Van Rensburg does an incredibly deliberate knock on. It just doesn't,
yeah,
doesn't get given.
Just give him
that was
on.
Fun.
Knock
I enjoyed on. That.
There's a drive over try for the Royal 15. They
yes, it was impressive. And I liked in this that this first game of the tour kind of had the old values of kind of, you know, dodgy kind of snaky refereeing.
Yes,
that was kind of a return to the classical old values, which I quite liked.
Yeah,
but like, this game reminded me that people always say, you know, especially with like the Pro 14 and so on, that we want high quality refereeing, we want better quality refereeing, right? And I don't think we do. I think we just want fun, entertaining refereeing. We want.
I only want good, accurate refereeing when Munster are involved.
Yeah,
sure. Other than that, then I enjoy just chaos and shithousery.
I was watching this game and thinking, like, Mike Adamson is a technically far better referee than any of these, but he gets so much shit because he's technically accurate and because he will penalise a lot of things that would not have been penalised here, you know, or other referees of that kind of ilk, the sort of the stable of Pro 14 referees, you know, yeah, the Ben Whitehouses and the.
I think Ben Whitehouse has really improved as a referee from medium force Ben a couple of years ago, which he said himself on a radio interview was just like, what the fuck? But also, wow, fine head of hair, great beard.
Yeah. Suits a beard. Man who suits a beard.
Yeah. Anyway, no one will ever overtake Steve Walsh, but, you know.
No, but if somebody was, it would be Ben Whitehouse.
Yes. High praise.
On the opposite end, the Royal 15 score try that puts them like ahead, you know, solidly ahead of about 50 minutes ago. And I am such a huge fan of just how much that forward enjoyed it. Like, that is a big, ugly bastard loving his life. And yeah, I love that for him.
Yeah.
And like, you like this with the Royal 15, like, you could see that, like, that they sense that there was a huge moment here.
Yeah.
And I don't like to kind of like, you know, oh, well, what are they thinking? They're all thinking that they're really liking winning this game. No, but like, that idea, like, and that, like, that feeling that shit, we actually could beat the Lions here.
Yeah.
And like, the crowd believed it. And I love that, like, the super biased commentary as well was just like, they believed it could happen too. And like, watching the game back as well, I was just like, thinking, I knew that the Lions would probably come back towards the end, but like, it was kind of hard to see where that was going to come from at that point, because they had been kind of incoherent for a lot of that early part of the second half, and not a whole lot was going right.
Lee Byrne scores an instant solo wonder try, basically from the kickoff. And I think if he didn't score that bullshit instant solo wonder try, I don't know if the Lions would have won this game.
Like, no,
mathematically, they do.
Like,
but
it's an up and under solo try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, and again, you tend not to see as many of those anymore.
Yeah,
no, the fullback taking the ball and then just running and just bumping. I remember looking back at the game thinking, I remember that happening quite a lot back then, but not necessarily as often now. I just loved, he just put a fucking welly on it. The ball went just flying it. He was following straight up afterwards. And then just drew a fucking kick on the ball as it came down as well. It's just like, yes, your
Lee
quality,
kind
Lee
of
Byrne,
turns
your
this game,
fucking quality.
Like, he somewhat turns this game, Lee Byrne, because there's like three or four really good kicks in a row that he does. There's like an up and under, there's a couple of clearances. There's one where he's off balance and he boots it like 50 yards into the Royal 15 half. And then, yeah, there's that try where he does the volley and scores it himself.
And there was also the first try, I think, was it a try for the Lions Tommy Bowe scored?
Yes.
That was very like that Ireland had run a very similar play that year during the Grand Slam. With that inside ball from O'Gara to Bowe. And he was like Tommy Bowe at the time. I mean, such a quality player. I mean, when he went to the Ospreys, he was so, so good. Like, I remember he was getting tortured during the that quarter final in Thomond Park. Everybody kept singing.
Yeah, he was playing fullback, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, and like, everybody was singing the Black Velvet Band at him because he'd sang that. After the Irish Grand Slam, everybody was kind of going like, get up with the Black Velvet Band. And it just
different vibe to stand up and fight, isn't it?
It is, yeah. That was a little more kind of, you know, more complex number from our difficult second album. But like, you look at like at Bowe on this tour, just the perfect player in that back three, kind of set an archetype really in some ways of that big, powerful winger.
I still think, Tommy Bowe is the model winger for the modern game. He almost came too early.
Yeah.
So good. Like, and the size, the pace, the not necessarily the best passer of the ball or whatever else, but like the lines he would take and the pace he would hit them. Just very, very dangerous if you had the players to find him.
He kind of played in an era where people underappreciated really good finishing wingers.
Yeah, but it was the sheer technique of it, of, you know, how good he was under the high ball and the bits that you look at. But his finishing was beyond phenomenal.
Yeah,
it was I remember there was a try he scored against Munster, actually, for the Ospreys, where he had absolutely no right to score it, where he was being pushed into touch by two people, but he just contorted his body in such a way that he could just about get the ball
finished
down.
It over his head, didn't he?
Yeah, it was kind of like reached round.
Yeah.
And but it was that kind of thing, you know. And there's a moment in this game, actually, where he is on his wing. He's picked the perfect line. He's in exactly the space. He will score it. And Shane Williams throws the ball behind him.
Yeah.
And Tommy Bow, despite being the loveliest man in the world, is so pissed off that he doesn't even, like, when Shane apologizes and kind of puts his hand in his, sorry, mate, he doesn't even acknowledge him. He doesn't even say it's all right. He's so annoyed about blowing that try.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I remember Tommy Bow getting re-criticized in the Irish media over here around the time he broke through in the Grand Slam year, that he wasn't quick enough. Because the criteria then were wingers are quick. If you are not quick as a winger, you must not be a good winger. No, he wasn't lightning, but he had so many other qualities to his game that are very, like, that would be more appreciated now. There's always room for a very quick winger, but for a guy who might be his size and physicality now, that wouldn't be a factor you would judge him on primarily.
Yeah. Look at someone like Keith Earls, how he's evolved his game. You know, like, he was always classically a lot quicker than Tommy Bow was. Now he's not quite as fast as he was when he was sort of in his mid-20s, but he technically knows how to run it what with what he does have. And, like, that try he scored at the end of the Six Nations from that Jack Conan back of the line out. And that was technically such a good finish because he knew how to sidestep the man in front of him and beat him to the corner using what pace he had. And there was such an awareness to it. And someone like Tommy Bow always had that and always knew how to time his run and how to time a pass or whatever, or even look for a pass to feign that defender a little bit more. And he was just such a world-class finisher in every regard. And he was always quick enough.
And what I loved about him is his physicality to get through that initial contact that he might have, that the line he's picked demands that he's able to, like, physically win a collision of sorts in that kind of space in between the defenders. He was always so good at that because you would see smaller ringers might go for a similar line, but they get bumped and disrupted by the contact they might get coming in there, and then that ends up taking them off stride. They don't get through, and that opportunity maybe doesn't get scored. With Tommy Bow constantly able to break that spot and then just get through and stay on stride. Such a good player there.
That Keith Earls offload that you mentioned earlier that didn't go to hand, where Tommy Bow was running the perfect, like, curved line to get away from the defenders. And, you know, if that goes to hand, Tommy Bow is good at scoring. If not going most of the way from just a fairly normal offload. But the exact curvature of his line is so spot on and gets away from anybody who can come anywhere near him.
Technically very, very excellent.
So good. So good.
And plus, with Keith Earls as well playing midfield here, which he did all season for Munster, there's an argument now, and he has said this himself previously. I think after around 2014, 2015, he kind of moved away from midfield, that he wanted to primarily focus on the wing at that point, because he's actually quite a small man, like physics stature-wise. Like, and he had to bulk up quite significantly to play in midfield and was eaten to an awful lot of injuries. I think even back in this game, you can see that maybe he would have been better as the guy taking the pass last, rather than being the guy who's in that hinge position where he has to either make the break and pass or whatever. It kind of stretched a lot of his game. And physically, he was always very quick and very agile. But, like, that even goes back to what people look at now for what an outside centre should be, where there's like the Brian O'Driscoll type player, skillful, able to break and all this. Not necessarily the qualifying criteria now for that position. Yeah. And where you even look at some of the players selected for the Lions this year, where the demands of the position, from, we'll say, what the old cliched thought of what an outside centre should be, is now kind of different, where you're like there's kind of been a real shift in physicality when you look at, I mean, certainly from an Irish perspective, you look at Brian O'Driscoll, not the biggest man going. Like, the sort of the demands of the position were sort of like, well, you can be smaller, you can be more agile, and I suppose you could still do that with whatever scheme you're running these days. But it kind of shows that with now the modern game, where you need to be a big physical hitter, almost like another flanker to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Should we just a couple of other points from the game to pick up on? Graham Rowntree's massive phone.
Yeah.
Graham, as I mentioned, you know, phones at the time perhaps not as advanced as they are now, Graham Rowntree at one point has to call up to the coach's box when he's on the sideline using an enormous, enormous phone about the size of his ears, which we all know about. Yeah, one other point. At one point, just before, you know, the Lions are starting to come back into the game, the Royal 15's captain says, or this is attributed to him as the captain. I heard him say it, but I didn't pick out who it was. And then the commentary says it was the captain. He says in a huddle just before the Lions maul, he says, "Boys, we need to start defending," which A, is good advice.
Inspiring.
And B, makes the bit in Invictus where Matt Damon says, "Forwards, we need to start scrumming," far more plausible.
Puts it in context a little bit, doesn't it? That's what team talks about. Maybe that was what they watched although this was Invictus, wasn't it? Was it? I can't remember.
Invictus came out earlier that year.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe that inspired.
Well, no, it's the following year. Invictus. Maybe they'd been to watch filming.
That's it.
Just beforehand.
That's it.
Well, you guess that Van Niekerk should look at that and go, "We need to start defending, boys. Our souls, our spirits," and just put that on a nice Instagram post, and it's perfect.
We need to start defending arseholes.
I spot at half time, there's a on the stats sheet at half time, don't tell Dickamanu, it says ball spread to wings was a stat on there, which is alarming. Because, like, what classifies as a ball spread to the wing? I know that a ball that gets to the, but like, what if it was knocked on in that wide channel and the winger just happened to have a run and scored?
13, probably was.
Yeah.
And what if the winger just happened to be next to the ruck and was passed to by the scrum half?
Yeah, does exactly. That count? Yeah, what if it was a crossfield kick? Yeah. You know, like they just thought it was an interesting. And the other thing, after Lee Burns' try, you can see three people in t-shirts: one with a B, one with an R, and one with an I. And you think, are they all wearing shirts that spell out British and Irish Lions? If so, they've got a massive squad with them. Maybe again, it's a geography 17.
I saw them from earlier in the game with different letters on it, and I was trying to figure. I think it was ISH.
Right.
It's like they must have been on many of them there.
Yeah.
Well, I thought of another stat you could put in for old rugby, like number of times the right to go wide was earned.
Yes. Percentage.
Only 35%. That's why they're losing. They're just not earning the right to go wide.
What did that even mean? But hey, they had to do it. You had to earn the right to go wide. You know, that wasn't an option.
I think something to help players and coaches across the country, they should have just had a stat that just said communication. What's going wrong, lads? Like, communication. Yes.
Or how much chat did we hear, and then like a percentage wise out of 100, 100% of our chat being loud enough to be heard.
Did
we like
they
this.
Say we have to start defending?
just the one
or that lad kind of going, "Rise it, lads, would you rise it, come on." How many times did you do that? 4 or 5 times. I remember hearing before at an A game, a Munster A game. And this was like mid-season, a lot of guys coming in, getting, you know, they were getting their injury, get or come back from injuries, whatever else. And it was as meaningless a game as you can play, right? And Munster A were losing at halftime. One of the coaches, I think it was Mick O'Driscoll,
right,
who was there, said,
"Bless him.
Let's see if any fucking pride in your jerseys." Fucking Munster A game up in Navan or in the middle of nowhere. It's just like, for fuck's sake. No, you don't use that now. Not in an A game.
I once heard, so there was somebody who I played with a while ago who was clearly quite insecure and wanted to always be the voice that was heard despite not being a very good player, and thought the world of himself and never passed the ball, never hit a ruck, nothing, despite playing in the back row. And once told us to show, basically he'd always do this big G up team talk saying, "Let's play Long Eaton rugby," which isn't a thing. Like, that's just the team we play for. Like, please specify what you mean by this. Do you mean we're going to play expansively? Do you mean we're going to be direct? What do you mean? And then once said in a team talk, not a team talk, sorry, we just conceded a try, "Let's play with a bit of pride." And then we just kind of turn around like, "Mate, it's the Boxing Day game against the over 35s. Why am I showing pride to play for the under 25s in this game where like half the team are half cut?"
You're going to be lucky if I'm running after the 20th minute. Someone's going to roll off fucking pride we're talking about here.
I feel like it's now a lesser story and you should have built on them. But my captain when I was in like under 15s or something, was a lad who never turned up because he played for like the high school team and he was sort of a good player, bloody bloody blah. But he'd come down for games every now and again. I barely spoke to him.
Bloody good player, I hate him.
But we conceded a try and like we were shite. Like we lost every single game that season. And this was like a friendly towards the end of the season. And he called us all, and like the try had been scored like at 13 channel. I was on the wing. And he pointed to me as like, you know, everyone come over. And he went over to like put my hand on my shoulder, like, don't worry, come in for the team talk to me. And I think that's the first time I'd ever spoken to him. And he called everyone in and we all huddled under the post while the conversion was being lined up. And he just like asked for silence. He then like put, like formed one hand into a fist. Stepped forward into the middle of the huddle, got down on one knee and went, come on, guys. he got up and started looking at us, like everyone individually.
We need to start defending.
Come on, guys. And that never left me. That guy.
Forwards, we must start scrumming.
But I remember, was it this tour that they, like the Lions video, the Lions documentary that came with it? Where they had like the Paul O'Connell bit where he's just like, I'll play for you all fucking day, Filsy. Yeah. Try to show on the fucking field.
I love that.
Oh my God, I love that.
That's great. That's like, vintage just Paul O'Connell.
The most basic stuff, like Paul O'Connell, like giving his coffee order and signing Limerick the other day. Mm. That was inspirational to whoever was taking it. Yes. Like an Americano. I could have a latte as well.
I'll have an X-Wave Ben Roster's finest, please.
A single tear rolls down their cheek. Whilst they're holding it together in his mere presence out of just sheer nervousness. But the moment they turn around, they don't need to fill up the kettle because they wept into it.
Hey, Matthew Rhys, I'll buy coffee from you all fucking day.
Are you ready
to put the fear of God into that cup?
The fear of fucking God into them. Oh, stop. I'm getting pumped up now thinking about Paul O'Connell giving me his coffee order. Jesus Christ.
Right,
we've got to get that Americano right.
I say it's time we move on to Man of the Match and Dig of the Day.
Hang on, we've not erupted the bit where the Lions win the match yet.
Okay,
yeah, no, it came down to everybody was sweating at the end. Like I remember looking at it coming into, I was like I said, the Lions do have the quality to win this. But they don't look like they have the quality to win it. And then the best, worst try I've ever seen scored with Lee Burns up and under, bouncing, kicking the fucking ball. Only a quality player could score a try that looked as good and as shitty as that.
Yes.
Of course, the Alan Wynne-Jones winning try afterwards as well. With 5 minutes to go, the Lions are losing by 3 points. Alan Wynne-Jones drives over, I suppose you touched on it earlier.
But was that never-ending maul?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And then it eventually kind of spins around. Yeah. Then there's, at the end, the Lions just kind of go, should we score another one, lads? And they just give the ball to Ricky Flutie, and he just goes, yeah, if I step this lad, then I'm sure I could go the whole way.
Yeah,
and if I pass it to somebody then, like, I mean, shit, who knows what could happen?
Yeah. Like, Paul O'Connell makes a break, Martin Williams makes a break, and offloads to Ron Nogara, who runs it under the post, and the game is done. Bam, there we go.
Yeah, like Ricky Flutie, interesting, I think he touches the ball twice. Once he knocks it on because he's carrying on the Keith Earls curse. And then the next time, he steps in at 10, I think, hoping that he can pass the curse on to someone else because he played 10 a bit for Wasps and so on. And they talked about him as a
potential. Takes the ball to the line, man.
Yeah, and he it's properly like, oh, I get why they keep talking about taking the ball to the line because it's so effective.
So easy back then, wasn't it? Yeah.
He just runs at some defenders and they go, oh, should we let him go through?
Yeah, there he is. You should have tackled him. Actually, we were. Come on, guys. We said we were supposed to start defending.
Yeah, look. We should learn our lesson. Come on, guys. I also enjoyed how all business Alan Wynne-Jones is and just doesn't care. Gets up, gets on with it. Next game, you know, there's 9 more games to go in this tour.
Yeah,
who cares?
I have legendary shit I have to start doing. Nobody interrupt me, please.
A legendary coffee company coming up.
Yeah. Okay,
I'm Alan Wynne Jonesing for a cup of coffee.
nice old cup of Jones.
This is just gold. He's listening to this and he's thinking, I'm writing this shit down.
Okay, shall we move on to Man of the Match and Dick of the Day?
Let's do it. We've barely spoken about the game, but that's fine.
Yeah. Shall we start with Dick of the Day? Because I think it's an easy one. I did text you during the game saying this is the easiest. Like, we've done, 50 of these near enough now?
Yeah.
I think this is the easiest Dick of the Day because it's just... Well, no, one shout for the referee who Mary Shonker, thank you, who turns to the Royal 15 team at one point and says, who's the captain now? And the captain hadn't changed since the start of the game. You've just forgotten who the captain was.
That is a very good nomination.
That's a nomination, but it's Kiefer.
I was going to go Kiefer as man of the match.
No.
Come on.
Turn up for the Bucks. Spot the Munster fan.
Yeah, no, he didn't have a good game. He didn't have a good game. I can't do that, though, so I'm just going to pick an arbitrary Shane Williams.
I mean, Shane Williams did run into touch totally unprompted at one point.
Oh, there you go. Funny. Fuck him.
Like, how did we not cover this? That Shane Williams at one point gets the ball and just nobody's coming across and he just runs into touch and it's just kind of like, that shit, that was really bad, wasn't it? I'm the World Player of the Year. And he just, there was, like, he wasn't tackled into touch. He wasn't doing it to avoid anyone. He just ran into touch untouched. It was remarkable.
At one point, Hugh Bladens apologises to the crowd for not seeing more Shane Williams.
Yes!
He's just like, I'm really sorry to everyone that paid to watch this. Both people, because for some reason the stadium is empty for the opening game of the Lions Tour.
Surprising.
Yeah.
So my Dick of the Day nominations include... So one of them obviously is Shane for doing that. Another one is Martin Williams for hitting Ronan O'Gara on a crash ball. He comes in at first receiver, and it's clearly like brilliant shithousery. Like, yeah. I've played against you so many times, I know your shit in contact. And he just gives him a short ball, knowing that he could carry it himself, it would be so much more effective. And instead he hits Ron Nagara and gets penalised for holding on, and Martin Williams clearly really enjoyed it. I think that the obvious contender for Dick of the Day, of course, is the King. For not showing up.
Where was he?
Where was the King?
Yeah, they had a temporal hole opened up from the 20s and he needed to show up and it was just like, no, I'm going to stay in my original timeline. I'm not going to welcome the Lions to the opening of the tour in 2009.
My Dick of the Day is indeed Keith Hills. Yeah. For reasons covered.
Minor Shane Williams, fuck him.
Okay, man of the match. I mean, I think we... I was going to go with someone we've mentioned once in passing. But I now feel like I've got to go for Lee Byrne, who was my narrow second instead.
Who was the one person you had mentioned?
Saro Pretorius, who I thought was really, really good at scoring for the World 15.
In fairness, he was really good.
He was good. I especially like there was a point where he took a quick tap and the Lions defence were like 15 metres back and he still got the penalty for not 10. And then at the end he takes a quick tap and Alan Wynne-Jones decks him from about 3 metres from the mark and doesn't get penalised.
When Alan Wynne-Jones came on the field, I'm not sure if he came on to replace, but on that maul, he hit some fella a fine dig off the back of it as well. And it's just like, yes. This player, I like this guy.
He's put next to Paul O'Connell and his shithousery increases so instantly drastically. There's a bit in the first half as well, just on quick taps, where Ronan O'Gara takes a quick tap, 5 metres out of the line, passes to Kiefer Hills, and Kiefer Hills just throws the ball over the dry line, like it's NFL.
Yeah,
there's also Simon Shaw attempts a quick tap, and he's like 10 metres away from the mark, and the ball doesn't leave his hands. And the referee just looks at him and goes, no.
Like, dude, you're 45 years of age. What are you doing here? How did you get on the field?
You can tell it's the first time he's ever thought about taking a quick tap in his life. And
that's
it's
like
it. Lions.
No, it's not. No. You don't know this, but Simon Shaw took the first quick tap at rugby school back in 1882.
So it's your man of the match, Lee Byrne, then, Robbie?
Or is sure. Let's go Lee Byrne.
Okay. Tom?
David Wallace.
Okay.
Quinlan was rocked, man.
I'm gonna go with Lee Byrne because he just looked just consistently quality all the way through the game, and again scored the best worst try I've ever seen.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, I really want to give it to Russell G. Cox, but
yes,
alas, no, I'm not going to. I mean, I think Rog played well. Obviously, Andrew Sheridan did everything well for the Lions. So
oh, yeah, and apparently he actually designed the shirts as well if they wore iconic as well. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and he picked up the cones afterwards as well.
Rugby's different, man. Yeah, rugby's just different.
I'm going to give man of the match to Jamie Roberts. I think when the Lions need to go forward, he kind of provided that. I don't care about the rugby. Like, we've done all of our talking about the match and the man of the match Dick of the Day sections, so, you know, I'm done with it.
Sure. I kind of wish I'd just given it to Saro Pretorius now.
Okay, change your vote.
But I don't know if he'll make the test team, you know, Saro Pretorius for the Lions. You know, I think he's a bit of a bolter making this squad.
I can't believe that she gave Dick of the Day to Keith Earls. Unbelievable.
I'm still getting shit from the Six Nations when I said him like absolutely doing Johnny May was like a snail stepping a Ferrari.
Oh God. And
I still get shit like on a daily basis. People saying, how dare you say that about Apple? I intended it as a compliment.
What have you got more shit for? George Ford. The George Ford thing where everybody then, well, not everybody, but they're just like, he had a bad game. And yet you said he's one of the best players in the world. Well, yeah. well.
Every time he drops a pass, I get six tweets. It's like, it's even gone beyond, like, I would get updates on literally anything Idris Afellay did for a very long time. It'd be like, he's just posted, he's bought some beans in the supermarket.
Oh, I suppose the woke PC mob want to cancel culture him for buying beans.
Yeah, like, hang on, guys. I just want to say, I like beans.
I also.
Let's not go nuts here. Right? I think we all like beans. You know, we won't go any further than that. We'll just take it handy.
What I'm really against is beans that like beans. You know, like that's what Israel Folau has an objection to is beans that get too comfortable with other beans.
Yeah, it's just like, come on now, this is a place of business. No, like liking beans? Come on now, you're a grown man.
Is the tin the bean's place of business, or is it the pan or the plate?
I think it's open ended. I think with the mouth is the real place of business for the bean.
Like Joe Van Niekerk, the smile that he eats. Do you think he ate Mr. Bean? Do you think that's how he began? He got really confused on his nutrients.
And Sean Bean.
Sean Bean.
I fully think that I started mentioning Van Niekerk here, and then his cultist showed up at my house. He's got long arms, that guy, at Van Niekerk, and they're getting longer.
Do you think this is like a Beetlejuice moment, and Joe Van Niekerk's about to join the Zoom call?
If he says like three times in a row, he shows up in your house and eats you.
Or he smiles with you and spreads goodwill.
It's like he either eats you or he indoctrinates you and really improves your sense of self-worth.
I might try that.
Yeah, it's a 50-50. That might work, actually. Like it's a bit of a gamble. You know?
I'll risk getting eaten for a bit of enlightenment.
Joe Van Niekerk is the new antidepressant.
Yeah. Does the woke PC mob cancel him for eating people? You eat one or two people? Hands up here who has not eaten at least one person.
Just one spider put his hand up. My brain did that as maths, but I can't make it work as a coherent thought. Okay. And I think with that, we should probably, much like Paul O'Connell ordering his coffee, bid everyone farewell. And
go off and drink your coffee.
Yes, their lives are now better.
We need you, Tom, in the most monotone way. Can you tell us all where people can find you and anything you want to plug? Tell it in the most monotone way possible.
Well, if you want to follow there on Twitter, it's at Three Red Kings, patreon.com/Three Red Kings as well, lads. If you follow me on there, and I swear to God, I'll follow you all day if you follow me on there. I probably won't, but you know, just I'll just say I'll do it now. So twitter.com
#follow
Three Red Kings #follow Friday.
It's a very 2009 ending.
Yeah. we need to embrace trends from 2009 every episode of this.
TikTok.com @Three Red Kings Instagram @Three Red Kings Rugby Just keep going. The player is waiting around. When's he going to get to the inspirational stuff? Just follow me on socials, lads, and then follow me around the pitch all day.
That was actually James Haskell's team talks. That's where they went.
Like and subscribe to me as captain as your fucking team, lads. Smash that like button like you're going to smash those rocks out there today.
What really inspires you before a match? Leave it in the comment section below.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh man. Well, I guess thanks for coming on the podcast.
We talked about rugby for a small while. that was enjoyable.
I think this is the background the whole time, you know?
this is probably the lowest proportion that we've spoken about the game. And like, we've done some DJ Khaled like focused episodes before, you know. Like there's a lot of competition for that, and we have really managed to chat some shit today. So I'm pretty happy with that.
Have started the new series as we mean to go on.
I think, do you know what? No, there actually was some good rugby chat in the middle of that somewhere.
Yeah. Somewhere.
I remember thinking, that's a good point.
Yeah. I also, of course, I saw your tweet last night, Tom, saying about that people complaining about you not covering the All-Irish League when you're on your week off away from Munster Island and everyone playing. But, you know, you're too busy talking about...
I'm doing serious business.
Yeah, exactly. Like, people can't complain about you or your division of time when you're busy having a enthralling conversation like this.
Time travel, cults, beans. This is important professional rugby writer stuff.
The holy triumvirate. That is the core of it. It's what we want out of rugby. More bean chat. More Jovanikic bean chat. By bean, we also mean coffee beans, which I believe you can get from Reese Ruddock, who has decided to cash in on the fact that he has a Welsh name and start a coffee business. Because he really felt Dublin was the only underserved market.
Have they ever even had coffee in Dublin? I'm not even sure.
I once saw some coffee in Dublin, and I thought, this is a story I'm going to tell someday.
You're not seeing Leo Cullen go in there and order it in a really, like, you know, expressive, inspirational manner?
No, but I did once have to make small talk with Leo Cullen while he was waiting for coffee.
Oh, okay.
So, no, you did not.
I did, yeah.
Oh, stop.
I was at the Pro 14 launch event thing.
Oh, was that the one in Cardiff?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And they had me and Andy McGeady were interviewing all of the coaches and captains. And everyone else had left the room, and someone popped out. It was just me, Leinster's social media person, and Leo Cullen. And then Leinster's social media person popped out to get Leo Cullen a coffee. And it was just me and Leo Cullen sat on a sofa together.
Oh, my God. So.
And then... Yeah. I kind of said like, oh yeah, you know, how's it going? How's your day going? And he went, it's good. Anne and I went, you know, it's been a busy day much for you? And he went, yes. And I thought, okay, there's no point going any further.
I'm getting real fuck off vibes from you here.
Yeah. So I then shut up. And like, neither of us were on our phones because I think Leo Cullen's too intense to get out an iPhone because it would break. You know, the sheer smouldering intensity of it.
Like he'd hate to see somebody like as he's looking up like something on Brown Thomas or something like that. Like get a new pair of shoes there. Can you imagine the shame? People knowing you like shoes.
No one can find a secret TikTok. But you then like when you're sat in a room on your own with Leo Cullen, knowing about five people are coming back in any minute, I don't think you get your phone out because that feels like
he's won.
You're saying, yeah. Yes. But it feels like me admitting that I don't want to talk to Leo Cullen, and then I've got to go and interview him immediately afterwards. So I just figured I'd just sit there, like trying to look casual, which I don't think I did a very good job of. It was a really bizarre minute that.
That would be excruciating for me now because it's just like so Leo. And just get into a brawl. See how it goes.
This is
for Alan Quinlan, you fucker.
Just maintain a really intense eye contact with him and see what he does. Yeah.
See if he breaks away and then he does coward. Oh, God.
I weighed that up and decided against it. Because I'd just done that with Reese Patchell and it felt like I can't do it too.
Especially when the other one's Leo Cullen, who would knock you out.
Yeah.
Or try to, at least.
The other great awkward moment there was during the lunch break, right? Like, me and Ali Stokes, friend of the pod, sat in the corner eating lunch together as the two least famous people in the room. Because, you know, like, everyone else was like, it was Ross Harris and then, like, the players and coach from every possible club and so on and so forth. And then, on the end of our table, where it's just the two of us sat, over came Robbie Kitchen, I think, who was the coach of the Kings at the time. Who came and sat on his own and awkwardly came and awkwardly sat and ate his lunch on the end of our table, not talking to us, not acknowledged, like just looking really quiet and awkward, like the unpopular kid in school who had to sit somewhere and there was nowhere else left. And I felt like, do I say how, like, this is the coach of a major professional rugby team. Admittedly, it's the Seven Kings, but it's still the coach of a major professional rugby team. Do I say something? Do I say hello? Do I try and welcome him in? Like, is he comfortable being sat on his own awkward? Because he looked awkward. He didn't look comfortable at all. And honestly, the amount, I got far more out of just sitting around and watching, like, having Shane Williams reach across me at a buffet there was better than, you know, like him signing my autograph when I was a kid. You know, like you get more out of thinking, huh, there's Sean Holly looking at the buffet.
Than you there he is. Of,
yeah.
You're looking at. You're like,
telling
Sean?
The buffet he's in, that's a coach.
Yeah. When I've ever been in those situations, I've just found blustering my way through is probably the best way to go.
Yeah, yeah. That's like, it. That's what,
hey, how's it going?
That's generally the way forward. I've had like false confidence.
Oh, stop. My career is built in it.
Yeah. Oh, the likewise. We've both got pretty far, all considered.
Yes, we're just like constant imposters. Yeah.
It's good to finally admit this in something that isn't going to be publicly broadcast.
Yeah. Oh, stop. It's just like if we're off recording now, oh, stop. Just constant, like, what am I doing? Why is anybody looking at this?
Should we stop recording?
Should we wrap this up?
So, thank you, Tom, for joining us.
Cheers, Tom.
Thank you, Will, as ever. Thank you for listening. Thank you, please join us next time when we will look at the Lions against the Lions.
Oh, yes.
The Lions took on the Golden Lions, and spoiler alert, they won. That is coming next time. Until then, thank you very much. Goodbye.
I like beans.
I do too.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.